Welcome to the season finale of Wild Geese Work and Wonder, a podcast made in collaboration with the Wild Hope Center for Vocation at Pacific Lutheran University. I'm your host, Becca McAnally, and I'll actually be graduating later this month, so next season a new host will take over. I wanted to say thank you to all of our listeners and supporters, as it has been a great joy to contribute to the work of vocational discernment at PLU in this way. On this special episode, you'll get to hear the voices of our Wild Hope Fellows, who have spent the year exploring different perspectives on vocation and what it means for their own lives. Being able to interview them was a huge honor, and each of them are doing really amazing things. I hope you'll enjoy the show and that you'll come away feeling both inspired and challenged.
Well, hi, my name is Kia Miller, she, her pronouns. This is my third year at PLU, and I am a religion and social work double major.
Hi, my name is Elizabeth Elliott, a junior at PLU. Currently, I'm studying biology for my major in women's and gender studies as my minor. And I'm a Wild Hope Fellow, as well as like a CTE intern this year.
Hi, I'm Ryan Shane. My pronouns are he, him, his. I am an environmental studies and physics major here at PLU. And I, under normal circumstances, pre-COVID, I'm also a member of Choir of the West and have some campus involvement, just like campus jobs and stuff like that.
My name is Nick Etzel. My pronouns are he, him, his. And I'm currently a philosophy and environmental studies double major with minors in business, psychology, and innovation studies. I'm also a captain of the Men's Plus Ultimate Frisbee team here on campus.
Hi, my name is Rahel Ambichu, and I am a student at PLU studying biology, and my pronouns are she, her.
My name is Sophia Barrow. I'm majoring in elementary education with an endorsement in reading, and I'm also minoring in religion.
So my name is Chance Marsh. I'm a junior at Pacific Lutheran University. I'm majoring in biology and minoring in chemistry. I enjoy playing sports like basketball, football, and baseball too sometimes.
Yeah, my name is Trevor Kaitola. I use he, him pronouns, and this is my third year at PLU, studying a double major in choral music education and vocal performance.
My name is Bridget Nalem. My major is nursing, and I'm a double minor in religion and psychology. I'm from Alaska, but I hate the snow, and I really love it here in Washington.
My name is Luis Reyes. I'm a current third year double majoring in environmental studies and biology, and my pronouns are he, him, his.
Each of the fellows put together an elevator pitch, which is a short speech in which they answer the question, what is vocation? Here are their thoughtful responses.
Vocation is often described as a calling or a purpose, but like it is more than that. It can also be much deeper, is probably how I would describe it. And vocation is that thing in life that you feel drawn to, that career that calls you, that concept that keeps pulling you back in, the subject you can't stop studying, or the service you can't stop doing. I think vocation comes from this place inside of you that kind of nudges you towards a path in life that will fulfill you and kind of like set you on fire with just passion for doing that thing. And then vocation can include relationships with others and with the world, and it's the thing that fulfills you and helps you to find meaning in life while also looking out for the well-being of others and working to promote, you know, flourishing of everybody. And your vocation might be revealed in a career choice, through personal or family life, through volunteering, or something else. Each person's vocation is different and unique, but I think that you'll know you've found your vocation when you find that thing that you can't not do.
For me, there's two major definitions to use. Vocation is where your deep gladness meets the world's deep need. It's finding something that helps others with your talents and gift. Two, vocation is doing what you love, emerging yourself fully knowing you belong and that you can't not be doing it. If these resonate with you, I imagine you're seeing your paths and passions illuminated, but for me, they make me question my body, my past, my choice. I don't fall into either of these categories. Let me share what I've found. I chose my path because it hurt, because I felt pain, an open wound of my mother getting sicker and sicker, immobile. If vocation is a place where deep gladness meets the world's deep need, described as hunger met, I am starving to my death. What about my need? What if my gladness is actually sadness that is bringing me to service? Does service have to be selfishness? What if mine is selfishness? The world's deep need, only my performance to train my selfhood. Is this me? What if my life is beyond do what you love? What if I do what angers me, what I hate to see, microaggressions, body broken if they aren't white, if they aren't straight, if they aren't male? Does it then become my passion, social justice? Shouldn't it be there for everyone? Shouldn't I already know? What is my turning point? Is it my mother's multiple sclerosis or the way she has been treated with it as a Black woman in America? What am I? I am only a body being consumed for the world's hunger, using anger to fuel my way. I don't know what vacation is. I only know what it is not for me.
The question of what should I do often comes at the expense of what do I want to do. The former can act as an inhibition, whereas the latter typically acts as a driving force behind progress. Vocation is the reconciliation between these two factors, where the should does not bind you and instead works with the want to guide you. Your life is like climbing a stalwart tree. The tree begins with roots laid below you and concludes at the peak of its terrestrial apical growth. There are many ways to reach the top, and you have the choice to determine which path to take. There's no correct way to conduct and conclude your life's journey at the peak of the tree. Vocation, in this simile, is like the branches upon which you scramble in your climb. Every branch you use is foundational in each passing moment. They support you in the present and equip you to look ahead toward future goals, but your journey does not need to stay confined to a single branch. Likewise, your vocational journey does not remain fixed or stagnant, and there are infinite vocations you can fulfill that can carry you through life to the top of your tree. With this in mind, I challenge people to look at the patterns of the branches they have used in their lives. Where have you stumbled upon a flow that conflagrates the conventional concept of constant time so that you find yourself unbound by time and the constraints of the should, leaving you with only a desire to continue on a path that sparks fire in your heart? How does your heart's fire provide the spark for a life of fulfillment, self-actualization, and giving? Where is the next branch you will use in your life's journey? Vocation gives the answer.
To me, vocation is what you get when you own the spark others already see in you, and you combine that with your compassion for the communities you are a part of and will be a part of. It can be an individualized niche or something which is done in community. It is a form of service which moves fluidly between intentional and instinctual action. It is the pull you feel which drives you to not simply do what you ought to do. It is the fulfillment you feel when you are in a state of flow. Just thinking about your vocation makes you smile just a little bit wider. It is the affirmation you receive from others when they recognize your contribution to the flourishing of all lives. It is what compels you to care for others and your community. It is what feels like your life. Vocation is what challenges you to embrace your inner humanness. It is deeply personal, yet will have ripple effects throughout your community. It is the deepest connection between your soul and your heart, and it is a gift you give to the world, which in turn fills your cup. It is the answer we all yearn for, but more than anything, vocation is a word that cannot be understood by looking in a dictionary. It is a word open to interpretation, unique to each person and their experiences of this beautiful thing we call life.
So vocation for me right now is, I think it doesn't have a universal definition. I think it's up to the individual and up to interpretation. For me right now, it is a force that's unsettling. It is a deeply rooted truth, no matter how much I try to conceal it and neglect it, it will always spring back up and catch on. And vocation is a state of mind with action. It's basically your collective distilled feelings towards the world that manifests and exudes out.
So I remember sitting among the hundreds of PLU students at convocation, my first year at PLU, and hearing that word come up multiple times. And I've heard it when I went to high school and grade school, but I was amazed at how PLU made it sound like a journey, and a journey that I would not be alone in, and how vocation was not just my future occupation or a fixation on finding my calling, because at the end of the day, everything I need is already within me. So with my own talents and strengths and weaknesses combined, it makes my own selfhood, integrity, and ultimately my vocation. And so to know my vocation is an important step in order to discernment, because it is where my heart is. And after all, it's the one thing you can't not do, right? And so that is why being a Wild Hope Fellow and discerning my vocation is so important, especially because it is with a group of peers within the cohort who are trying to do the same.
So vocation is difficult to talk about and discuss because many people don't understand the meaning of vocation. And so the American Heritage Dictionary defines vocation as a regular occupation, especially one for which a person is particularly suited or qualified. However, this definition of vocation does not fully embody what a vocation truly is. Everyone's good at something, but that doesn't mean that should be your vocation. This definition can also be troublesome because some people are well suited and qualified for a job, but do not want to do that job. Other people may be pushed toward a job by family or friends or even close acquaintances just based on their personality or their interest. But vocation is more than just your interest and your talents and what you want to do and how they come together. It's about doing something that you want to do, and participating in your vocation should bring you peace. And so even though you may not love your vocation every day because there's just some aspects that you don't like, you should still enjoy the majority of your time spent doing your vocation and be at peace while participating in it. So discovering your vocation can be a very difficult and long journey, but I believe it, people shouldn't worry because the end result is rewarding and it's worth it. Personally, I see my vocation, I would like to be a vet. And so I was thinking about doing pre-med when I started school, but eventually that changed just because I want to work outdoors and work in the agriculture community. So as of right now, I'm planning to attend veterinary school and work in that field.
Yeah. So one of my favorite definitions of vocation is where your greatest passions and the world's greatest needs meet. So kind of finding the ways that you can serve for the greater good. So there are the things that I love to do and the things that I feel the most at home in, but then thinking about the ways that I can turn that into service to others, either to people I know directly or just to the world overall. And it's kind of piggybacking on that, the thing that you cannot do or can't not do. And so for me, that's music and music performance and storytelling. And so that's both through performing the actual music and then also through teaching and education, telling those stories and imparting that knowledge to students and folks that I work with.
So I used to think vocation was a type of post-secondary school where one learns about work or where a potential career choice through hands-on education. But I eventually learned that it could be something that people feel they were destined to do, or maybe they were even born with, something that was meant for them, something that people think they're good at. But there are a lot of ways you can interpret the meaning vocation. But I like to think that it's much more than what you're good at. I think it's something that involves a great deal of passion. It's something that you're pursuing because you have a zeal for it. For a long time, I think that the two words career and vocation were mixed up. For instance, I used to think you can choose a career, but you can't really choose vocation. And I think that the difference between what a career is and what vocation is the emotion behind the two that one can feel. So in other words, I feel like the way you can differentiate the two is that a career, you feel you're simply just going through the motions of it and there's not much to it besides that. But with vocation, I think you feel it's something that brings you satisfaction, fulfillment, contentment. A career is something that you do because you're good at, whereas a vocation is something that you do is just what makes you feel whole. Finally, a career is something you look for and a vocation is something that's already there.
As humans, we deem it as one of life's greatest goals and achievements to find our purpose in life, our calling, our vocation. No, not a well-needed break from the overwhelming responsibilities one possesses, but rather a deep self-reflection within yourself to consider the past, current, and future responsibilities that you partake in or would like to partake in if you can see yourself doing these roles for years to come. The road to vocation is certainly not an easy one. Oftentimes, it's a long and winding road that can create motion sickness causing stops along the way, present unforeseeable obstacles that can obstruct the path, or even lead you down freshly constructed detours. But it's a rewarding and fulfilling destination that, if truly followed through one's passions and interests, can lead to a lifetime of pleasurable days. There are no restrictions to how many vocations a person can have either. You can have one or countless findings. Now, a simple view of parent when finding one's vocation. You can be a child or an old timer or anywhere in between and still experience the same desire for a cause, possibly sculpting it a few times to design the ideal scene at the end of the journey. A solidified set time is never known on the vocational experience. It's an extensive trip that for some can be quick while for others can last a great deal. But I undeniably believe that every person has their own vocation and it can look similar to others, but everybody has their own unique vocations. It is impossible not to have a vocation, and whether you agree or disagree, I ask you this. What are your passions that reside in your core, and what is preventing you from living them? And how do you ensure these drawbacks do not limit the distance you would travel for your joy, for your satisfaction, for your welfare, for yourself? This realization is your vocation.
If you could fix one big problem in the world, what would it be?
I think one big problem in the world that I would fix would be kind of the way that we treat the elderly in the US. As a social work student going through social work policy right now, I've been hearing a lot about how, the elderly are often left with really nothing after they retire. Sometimes, they don't have a retirement fund, they don't have children or grandchildren who can support them. And like social security and pensions are just like not enough a lot of times. And so I just think that older adults have so much like this rich depth of knowledge and like wisdom from their life experience. And I wish that we could find a way to just better support people as they age and be able to like honor them more and learn from them.
Yeah, right now I'm definitely thinking about like all the social issues in the world right now, like Black Lives Matter and like Stop Asian Hate, and just the violence happening to people of color, to like bodies that just aren't normative, like meaning like they're not cis white males. It's just like, it's hard to see it, especially with my race, like as a biracial individual who like is white passing. And so oftentimes like I get to see the system like against like my mom, for example, as a Black woman. But then I also see like my dad being like talked to like by strangers who believe he's like another white guy in this like white supremacist society. And so I really wish that it was possible to fix those problems. But even if not that, I've been thinking a lot about our knowledge production and how we know what we know. And so even if we just educated ourselves more about like race growing up and like, what does it mean to be like your identities and those categories? I feel like that's one thing that I would really like wanna see and I'm really passionate about, like seeing to fruition and like would stand for, like to see in the world.
If there's one thing I've learned from my environmental studies major and just at PLU in general, it's that everything is interconnected. That's why interdisciplinary studies are really interesting and important. And yeah, I'd say I'd fix the problem of individualism, just because I feel like that's at the root of a lot of other social justice issues like racism, sexism. And I feel like if people just have less apathy toward their neighbors and care more and approach problems from the mindset of like care and service toward their neighbor and for everybody, I think that those problems would be easier to tackle. It'd be easier to dismantle these oppressive systems. So yeah, individualism in short is a big problem that I think would help tackle some other big problems too.
I was trying to think of something, you know, our world is so interconnected. So trying to find something that was at the root of all the different problems of racism, inequality, abuse, environmental degradation. And I think all these can be found in a root of a failure to listen to other voices. So a piece of advice that my dad gave me, which still sticks with me today, is seek to understand, not to be understood. So in studying philosophy, I'm beginning to understand and learn how important it is to listen to the other side or the opposing views. And I think that that is what the world is kind of failing to do right now, is just we're so focused on imposing our own views without understanding the views of those who have been oppressed for years, those who just disagree with us on a religious level or political level. And so at the end of the day, I think, you know, schools and different, you know, parenting techniques should focus a lot more on the skill of listening to another point and soaking it in.
It's a huge problem, but I want people to live a safe and secure life, meaning that people would have enough food to eat, shelter, homes to live in. Basically, just like the basic necessities of life, because without them, life is not fulfilled and our lives will be not a good thing. So I think I would try to fix that just as an overall, like providing the basic necessities for people to thrive.
So when I looked at this question, a multitude of responses came to mind, whether it be poverty, healthcare, education, or even workers' rights. But currently at this very moment, when I want to answer this question, the first thing I want to say is the COVID-19 vaccine and access to it specifically, because it's sad at this day and age, still there's a perception that, you know, maybe it's not as pressing of an issue or that it'll go away really soon, but that is not the case, especially in third world countries or countries that are just not our own. And this is an issue that is very dear to my heart, just because I have family members who are not from this country and we're very privileged to have access to the vaccine like we do now. And so while the United States is improving and we're vaccinated, there's going to be other countries that won't have it for years and years. And so then they're kind of going to be placed on the back burner because we're going to be improved and vaccinated.
This was a tough question, and I spent a lot of time pondering this question because there's just a lot of problems, sadly. But I eventually chose world hunger. That's just because every country throughout the world, there are people who don't get enough food to eat every day. And food is a necessity of everyday life. And it just saddens me that even with all the technology we have created, iPhones and computers and all that, we still haven't found a way and figured out a way to produce / provide people with enough food to eat.
Yeah. So, I mean, it ties right back into that idea of education. A lot of specialty careers and interests as you move later into life, they really depend on kind of your access to those things like in your childhood. So someone who was privileged enough to be able to take voice lessons in high school, I was then more set up to do music in college, and I was able to get some scholarships because of it, which I wouldn't have had access to if I didn't take those lessons. And people on things like elite sports teams and things like that, they get access to those specific training programs that usually cost a lot of money, specifically for athletics, a little less so for music. But so kind of getting students equipped to pursue those interests in early childhood so that they can have more success later, because it does affect the ability to get money for things later. So with music or with athletics, as you move into schools, if you haven't had that really rigorous time early in your childhood, not to say that you couldn't do it without those specific programs, then you're less likely to have access to those things later, which starts to cycle for students and children. And so ways that we can increase access for that kind of foster everyone's individual interests, regardless of their ability to pay for them, kind of in that vein.
Right now, I would have to say Well, since I am a nursing major, there's so many fields of nursing that you can get into that I wasn't aware of. But the most like typical one that we think of, like when we think of nurses, is in the hospital setting. But recently we went to clinicals. I'm in the mental health rotation right now, which is why I'm like speaking about it so much. I feel like that it's just like not being taken seriously enough. So I think just taking something, like if you're making your life or me making my life, is that taking something that I truly feel like needs to be changed or something that I believe I want to see change in, like while I'm still living, to pursue that and not just be in nursing because I want to make money or just like help others. Like, yes, help others, but like help others in a meaningful way, not just to help them, you know?
If I could fix one big problem in the world, it would be for everyone to become more hyper-aware of their surroundings and truly work on creating a healthy coexisting environment for all living organisms. Some people are more aware of other living things, but it's usually limited to only those things that are easily visible to the human eye, like animals, trees, and other human beings. However, even though they're seen, that does not necessarily mean that these living organisms receive the same kind of treatment to thrive in a location. Due to the negligence and God complex some humans possess, can cause the destruction and possible extinction of so many beautiful things. It is especially hard to include other living organisms in the mix because even within humans, particularly those that attain salient identities like white, cis, male, Christian, etc., at times may not act the best towards marginalized communities and have even created a system throughout the years for them to fail or make it exceptionally hard for them to succeed.
Maya Angelou wrote, "I've learned that making a living is not the same thing as making a life. How do you see the relationship between making a living and making a life? Are these the same to you or are they separate?"
I think that for me, they're separate. This is something I hadn't really had the words to describe this, but then as I was thinking about it, I was like, oh, this is what I've been reflecting on lately, where like throughout the school year in the midst of the pandemic, at times I felt as though I just kind of like skating by in my classes, you know, doing enough reading to keep up, doing the assignments automatically, but not really taking time to enjoy it and like engage with all these things I'm learning and, you know, draw on this huge amount of knowledge that the professors have and that my peers have too. So I think for me, making a living is kind of like that, where it's just getting by, doing what you need to do, but not really enjoying it or engaging with it. So for me, like making a life is more like finding meaning and purpose and doing service, putting what I'm learning to use. And I mean, of course, there's going to be times when we just have to make it through another day. That's always going to happen. But I know I feel the most passionate and engaged when I'm actively trying to, you know, make a life. I think that means really feeling passionate about what I'm doing and actively trying to seek that out. Like for me, I don't really feel myself unless I'm doing some sort of service or doing something that contributes to the world and trying to use the skills and like vocation that I have to make a difference. And so I think that's what making a life means for me. I think I'm definitely feeling most called to working with, you know, adults and older folks. I don't know exactly what that's going to look like, but I know that I just really enjoy people in that demographic and they're very important to me. And so I'm excited to kind of get to know them better and see what can happen there.
For me, they have often been separate because I see my family members have like jobs for necessity and not necessarily jobs that they like or like love to do, because they just never had that like option or choice. And so for me, I've been focused on like, how am I going to live and not, am I happy? Like, is this what I desire? And like, I've really been trying to figure out how to make it one thing or how to change what I want. Because right now, the path that I'm on as a biology major isn't the same as my passion. And so right now I'm like working to try to make a living, but not a life I see myself in. And so they're beginning to mean the same to me, but it's taken a long path to realize. I would be remiss if I didn't like still struggle with the privilege to like have the option to like see if I could make them together instead of only having to make a living like my other family members, or also like seeing the way that people are disproportionately in different positions and social statuses based on their race, their like gender, sexuality. And so for me, it's been about like figuring out how I like re-change my outlook, but also thinking about what do I desire as a path. And even if it may not be in a lot of the like ways people think about like you're gonna make a positive like outcome with whatever you're doing, but if it's something I'm passionate about, like social justice is often like not seen as something that is connected to everything. It's only like something separate. And so it's also like harder to talk about as a, like a role or position. And so another part to like being able to identify like that they are similar is having to overcome that separation and division. And so I've definitely learned that I want them to be the same, even if I'm not living it right now. I'm really passionate about the way we know what we know. And like, I'm really interested in social justice and being able to see it through everything. I've definitely been thinking about how in my biology major, like I'm like really deeply impacted and like by like scientific discoveries, as I saw my mom grow up with multiple sclerosis and her health deteriorate. And so like growing up, I always thought that science would be a place where I would be able to share that experience and relate to others. And I've learned that I don't have that space to tell my story, to learn from others in their experiences. It's a lot of like technical skills. And right now, what I'm passionate about is figuring out a way where we can look at science as a like historical and social context instead of just fact, because it is created by others, and the way it's been created, distributed, and then used impacts others like positively and negatively. And that's something that I really want to uplift. And I don't know, but because I'm only like I'm a junior, it's something I really want to do more of in my senior year, and being able to like build a community that also has these same goals.
Making a living sounds like something you have to do. It sounds like a requirement. You have to like find ways to sustain yourself, your family, your community, things like that. And in the society that tends to be monetarily based. But making a life sounds like something that you get to do if you're in a privileged enough position to be able to focus on some of those things that you want to / get to do, other than just like surviving. So if you can find like the intersection between making a life and making a living, like more power to you. All the good things are going your way, because that's the most ideal version in my mind of making a life, is when you love what your occupation is, because we spend a lot of time in our occupation, kind of like sleeping. That would be kind of ideal. But like naturally, vocation is sometimes thought of where your job fits that kind of making a life, and like where your occupation meets your deep gladness kind of thing with Buechner. But vocation is so much more than just your job. It's your calling. It's your calling to serve wherever you might be. And that can be in your job, but it can also be in your other relationships. Can be just in your daily life outside your job. And that's one of the really empowering things that I like about vocation and conversations about vocation, is that it's everywhere. Just like your service opportunities are everywhere, so your vocation can be everywhere too. So making a life is, to me, more about building these relationships with people and fulfilling your vocation, just like even beyond your occupational vocation. Currently, as my primary vocation is as a student. So fulfilling my my roles as a student, just being that I was going to say studious student, but that's kind of, you know, involved in being a student. But just doing as well of a job as I am equipped to do in this capacity, just for myself, for everybody who's helped me get to this place, for my family who helps support me while I'm in college, and who has supported me through this entire, you know, life journey. But just also doing well in school for me is, you know, learning as much as I can, absorbing as much as I can, because then I can go out into the world and I can actually enact positive change, rather than just kind of like being, not that if you don't go to college, you can't enact positive change, but for my journey, I would not be doing justice to the world if I was not doing my best job of, with the hand I've been given and with the hand that I am currently playing in college. So I see my vocation as a student.
I think they're a lot like apples and fruit. So making a living is an essential component of making a life, but there is more to it than that. Making a living encompasses so much more, or making a life encompasses so much more than making a living. This is parallel to the fact that while all apples are fruits, not all fruits are apples. So that's kind of the relationship I see there. I think making a living is what maybe most folks would deem, you know, how they would define vocation. It's your 9-to-5, your way of providing for yourself and your family. And obviously, as we've talked about before, maybe that isn't the fullest understanding of what vocation really is. So again, I'm pulling out all the metaphors right now, but are you familiar with the rocks, pebbles, and sand analogy? So it comes from a video where a professor has an empty jar and proceeds to fill it as much as possible with rocks. Then he asks his students, is the jar full? And they all say, yes. And then he proceeds to take pebbles and fills in the little gaps between the rocks, and again asks, is the jar full? And they all say, yeah. And then once again, he takes sand and pours it in, and it fills in every tiny gap until the jar is truly full. And he uses this to speak on happiness and saying that, you know, there are all these little things that are part of our happiness, and one is not necessarily more important than the other. And we have to balance the way that we are, the things that we put into our life that make us happy. But I was trying to think of how to connect this with vocation. And I believe that maybe making a living is the jar that provides the opportunity to make a life. So the rocks, the pebbles, and the sand are all the little things that we do when we're not working our 9-to-5. So whether that's volunteering in the community, being a parent, you know, playing a sport, climbing trees, hiking, you know, the things that we really enjoy that maybe fill our cups more than our job. That is how I see the relationship between making a living and making a life. And thinking about that for me, I've had various jobs since I was 8, and those have all provided me the financial flexibility to do the things that I love at PLU. And I couldn't be more happy about where I'm at right now and where I'm going. I don't have a specific thing that I'm feeling called to do right now. I think at the end of the day, why I'm studying what I'm studying is to have a more holistic understanding of the world and of people, and trying to take that into every arena of life that I end up in.
Yeah, actually, I was thinking about it, and I had some journal entries from last year. And somebody told me that that somebody actually does something they're passionate about, their vocation, they got it all. And I was asking them about, you know, like just an advice. And they said, imagine the life you want to live, not the job you would want to have. And that kind of changed my attitudes towards vocation and you know, making a life instead of making like a job center my life around it. So yeah, I want to live a life that I want, not a job or like a title I'm seeking for. Well, at this moment, I am working with youth right now. I'm also interning at Fred Hutch, so science. And I'm trying on everything that I can be a part of. I'm just trying to see where I could thrive, you know, where I could contribute the most. And I also am learning and internalizing that I don't have to do one thing in my life. I can do multiple things. And so that's my vocation, just trying to do as many things as I can that makes me happy and that fulfills my my dreams. And also I'm always looking for helping my community. I'm deeply rooted in that. So yeah, I'm doing that. I think I am living my vocation, to be honest, right now.
So this question made me think about a recent post I saw on May Day through the D Center, where Lutes wrote in chalk about what May Day meant to them. And one of the pictures had the saying, quote, "The poor deserve housing, food, and leisure," end quote. And so I remember thinking to myself, like leisure, that is not one of the first things I would think of. And then that word came up again in a most recent activity we did during our fellowship, where we had to rank certain values 1 through 5, and leisure came up again. And I say this because as important it is to make a living, to have security, it is important to recognize the privilege to make a life and what that means to you. Because for me, growing up, my family did not have a lot of money, so I was able to find joy in the small things. And my mom never placed an overwhelming pressure for me to work unless I wanted to, so that I was able to make a life for myself and not just exist for the purpose of working. And so the way I look at this quote is, if I were to take away my future occupation, which I love so much, would I still be satisfied and still find joy and passion and fulfillment in my life? And so although I do think making a living and making a life can coexist, I think one must be working on making their life actively in order to bear the most fruit out of what they choose to do for a living. Making a life, to me, like I said, is finding joy in the small things that money can't buy. As cliche as it sounds, I really do think making a life and working on yourself, strengths and weaknesses combined, is where you will be most fulfilled later on.
In one sense, I agree with this quote, because we can get so caught up trying to make money and that we forget to build relationships with others and our family outside of work. And sadly, a lot of people fall into this trap. And personally, I've been trying to work on this in my own life, because I know because of my personality that I'm someone who could easily get caught up in work and forget to make a life. And so I don't work a full-time job right now, but I also don't want to be in work mode all times of the day when I'm older and forget to build those relationships with family and friends. So in school, I've been working on this, just working hard to try and separate the work and life. And I do this by just setting up specific times in the evening when I just stop doing homework and just quit doing it and put my computer away and just relax and talk to other people and hang out. And so, however, on the other hand, after talking about vocation through this past year with Wild Hope Fellows, I've also realized that you can make a living while also making a life if you truly love what you do. It can still be a fine line, because even if you love what you're doing and love your job, you can still forget to make a life. And even if you're doing your vocation, you can still be so focused on your job that you forget to build those relationships and with others.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, the goal is that you get to do what you love for the rest of your life. And then you get to do something that can kind of support that on the side. And so thinking about, like, truly living is doing the things that I always say, fill your cup. And if you can find a way to do that while that maybe not necessarily that being your career or something. So like, for example, in at PLU, I work for admissions, which is great. And I love doing it. And it's a wonderful part of who I believe myself to be. And I like wouldn't trade it for anything. But that's not like what I like plan on going into, but it's nice because I can do that for work and then I'll have time to do music on the weekends or in the evening times. And so kind of ways that they can work together. And I think that it's really important your true calling and your personal vocation is not something that is necessarily your career and what you quote unquote make a living out of, the thing that you make a living out of is something that shouldn't be hurting you and preventing you from doing something like that. And so I think that while maybe not every job you have is going to be like the best job ever and you're not going to love it the best, as long as you're not actively hating it, I think that that's better. But I do think that there are situations where some things just like aren't like true fits for folks. And if it's like keeping you from living up to your full potential, then why are you doing it? And so I kind of see those two working together. So even if they're not related, so like, for example, admissions and music are not related at all, but I love doing them both. Whereas like, I could not see myself like doing landscape crew. I personally would hate that. Some people would love it, but that is something that I know would keep me from living my best life if that were the job I had to do to support myself to do some music.
I would say that they're separate. I think that if your motto is making a living, then you're just kind of just going through the motions of things. You're finding jobs simply just to make money, pay for bills, support yourself and your family, and doing it over again. And if you're making a living, it feels like routine, and it's just the routine that you're probably dreading, and you're just doing it because you have to, and you have to have that job to survive, to buy food, to pay bills. Which is, there's nothing necessarily wrong with that, but you're just kind of complacent where you're at. And people just get into jobs just because that's where the money is. But if your motto is making a life, then you're doing what you can do to make your life a life worth living. You're doing the things that you love, and you look forward to what your day will bring in next. You find happiness in what you're doing. And even if you have bad days, weeks, or months, if you're making a life, you won't let those bad days, weeks, or months like define your life. You just know you'll pass over it. And I think people who have that making a life as their motto will choose the favorite thing they do to make their job. They're not looking for a job, but like just coincidentally, the things that they enjoy is their job. That they want to do it. They don't care how much they get paid or what their reputation is or how many hours they get. They're just doing it because they enjoy it. I really appreciate Wild Hope Fellows. It made me think about like my own career in a different way, because I feel like for the longest time I was just like making a living, and that's just what I thought life was. And like, we can't really do much. And I was just kind of complacent with that, like, oh, we're just born to work and like have this routine and support ourselves and die and then make sure we have kids and make sure they do it too. But who's supposed to, like, we only get this one life, and that we can make the most of like how we choose to spend our time and what we want to learn and stuff.
Making a living is not the same as making a life for some people, but for others, these two ideas are synonymous. Oftentimes, we start off by making a living with any job that'll take us, because everything in the world costs money, and the only way to live a somewhat comfortable or fruitful life is by partaking in labor. We all experience a job that we aren't too particularly fond of, but continue to take part in it because at the end of the day, money makes the world go round. As for making a life, I feel like that's when someone can fully engulf themselves in their vocation and enjoy every second of every day in their life, because this activity or job is what they envision for themselves to do for a long time. Unfortunately, sometimes the vocation doesn't pay the bills or put food on the table, so that's when people start to settle for a blue-collar job or any other dreadful job just to make ends meet. On the other hand, people can have a vocation that is both financially and emotionally rewarding, thus causing the individual to never feel as though they are ever truly working, but rather enjoying and living their life at every single second. Making a life, for me, includes issues revolving around social justice, but also focusing on aquatic organisms. I want to become a marine biologist. So I know from personal experience, a lot of marginalized communities get the short end of the stick on terms of environmental racism. So I want to uplift their voices and their experiences while also making sure that aquatic ecosystems in particular are still thrive and still continue to thrive in generations to come, because over the years they have diminished and they have, you know, been destroyed through the Anthropocene, and kind of just uplifting both voices, even though they feel silenced at both times. So kind of just not being like a voice for them, but being an individual who will partake in whatever needs to be happened to make sure and ensure that both of them, both people, both things live a fruitful and healthy life.
I love how each of the fellows answered the questions in such unique ways, and yet they all touched on issues related to promoting human flourishing and making the world a more just place. The Wild Hope Fellowship is a one-year program at PLU in which a cohort of students studies different perspectives on vocation alongside each other and faculty and staff members. They reflect on what it means to live lives of meaning and purpose in the present and the future, and they encourage other students to do the same. Selected for their commitment to service, the fellows are leaders on campus and in their communities. You've been listening to Wild Geese, Work, and Wonder, a podcast made in collaboration with the Wild Hope Center for Vocation at PLU. Thank you to each of the fellows for making this episode possible: Kia Miller, Elizabeth Elliott, Ryan Shane, Nick Etzel, Rahel Ambachu, Sophia Barrow, Chance Marsh, Trevor Kaitola, Bridget Nalem, and Luis Reyes. Our music was composed by Emma Christensen. We also want to express gratitude for the works of the late Mary Oliver, whose poem, Wild Geese, inspired the name for this show. I'm Becca McAnally, and it's been a pleasure creating this podcast and being your host. Stay tuned for season 2 of this show coming fall 2022 with a new host. And follow us on Instagram at PLU Wild Hope to stay up to date on the work of the Wild Hope Center for Vocation. Thank you.